I'm not so sure that's such a great idea. Yeah, there's nothing worse than a reformed partier. I shot her a look. Humor me. We walked over to Uncle Mickey's house. There were people there, too. We didn't really have to sneak anything. My Uncle Mickey was more than happy to unload a few beers. I drank mine down, then I drank another. Slow down, cowboy. I shot Sam another look, and then I downed a third beer. And then a few minutes later, I was feeling those beers. I was like, whoa. I don't think that was such a great idea. No bueno, Fito said. Beer isn't what you need, vato. I nodded. What you need is us, Sam said. So don't fucking run away. I offered her a crooked smile. I won't run anymore, I said. Let's put some food in you, Fito said. Yeah, good idea. We walked back to Mima's. I was feeling a little lightheaded. Chugging three beers on an empty stomach? No bueno, Fito said. I was kind of leaning on him. No bueno is right, vato. Just keep leaning into me, dude. That's all you need to do. Dad was at the stove warming something up in Mima's kitchen. Marcos and Lena were at the sink, washing pots and pans. Lena? I guess I hadn't noticed. I waved at my dad. Hi.
Where have you been hiding?
I guess I was a little drunk. Yeah, I was a lightweight. I walked up to my dad and put my head on his shoulder.
Have you been drinking?
Yep. I really held on to my dad just then. No Mima in Mima's kitchen.
Are you okay?
Yeah, Dad, I whispered. I had a moment.
Don't drink, son. Don't do that.
I nodded. Okay, I said. My dad took me by the shoulders and looked at me.
Do you want to see something really fantastic?
Then he cocked his head like, follow me. So I followed him, and he motioned for Sam and Fito to follow too. So there we were in Mima's bedroom. My dad pointed to Mima's bed.
Sit.
Sam and Fito and I just looked at each other. He handed me an envelope.
Open it,
he said.
Be careful, it's fragile.
I held the envelope in my hand and opened it with all the care that was in me. And there, in the envelope, were some dry leaves. Yellow leaves. And there was a note. I stared at Mima's handwriting. These are the leaves that my Salvador gave me one Saturday afternoon when he was 5. I knew then that that day had been just as beautiful for her as it had been for me. She'd remembered. My dad was smiling. I handed the note to Sam. She and Fito read it. And then they were smiling too. Dad. Grief. Marcos. One more thing I remember about that time. The day after we got home, Marcos came over in the late afternoon. I answered the door. Hi, I said. Dad's in his studio. I walked with him to the back door. He went through the door, and just as he stepped into the backyard, my dad came out of his studio. I turned to go back into the house. I don't know why. I stopped, turned around, and looked out. My dad stood there talking to Marcos, and then he was crying. Marcos took him in his arms and held him. I thought of what Mima had said. Déjate querer. Yeah, Dad. Let yourself be loved. But there was something else. In that moment, I saw that I wasn't paying attention to my dad's pain. I was only paying attention to mine. I was ashamed of myself.
Dad. Me.
I couldn't sleep. Maggie was in Sam's room. I wished Maggie were here, lying next to me. I couldn't stop thinking about my dad's face while Marcos held him. Wasn't it my job to take care of him like that? I got up out of bed and walked toward my father's room. I knocked on the door and slowly opened it. I could see his lamp was still on. Dad? Can I come in?
Sure.
I sat on his bed. Dad?
Yeah?
I just wanted to make sure you were okay.
It's hard, he said. Grief is a terrible and beautiful thing.
I don't think it's so beautiful.
The hurt means you loved someone. That you really loved someone.
Dad. I reached for his hand. I'm here, Dad. I mean, I'm really here. My dad took my hand.
This is a good hand, he said. A very good hand.
Going for normal. I thought that maybe life would never be normal again. Not ever. And this time I was definitely going for normal. Too many things had happened, and I was tired. Sam sat across from me and said, "You're doing it again?" Doing what again? Isolating. No, I'm not. I'm sitting across from you. You're in your head? Yep. So spit it out. I was making a list of all the things that have happened. Keeping score? Well, maybe. It doesn't feel that way. It just feels like remembering. Remembering is overrated. And I've decided I'm going for normal. Too late for that, Sally. Things did get back to normal. But I felt that something had changed in me, and I didn't know how to put it into words. I framed my leaves and the note from Mima between two pieces of glass and hung them in the living room. It didn't seem right to keep them all to myself. I was now in the habit of taking out my mom's letter and putting it on my desk in the morning, then putting it back at night. Me and Fito and Sam got into going to the movies. We argued about which movies to see. Sam and Fito, they got into it some days. I'd always let Sam have her way, but Fito, man, he wasn't about to let Sam have her way all the time. I guess he was tired of being on the short end of the stick. I loved watching them. Lena had everything fixed that was wrong with Sam's house. She and Fito had a mutual admiration society going on, which was sweet. The realtor hung up a for sale sign. Sam posed me and Fito leaning on the sign, and she posted it on her wall. Of course she did. Her and her Facebook. Yeah, life was normal. School, movies, homework, studying. School, movies, homework, studying. Yeah. And I still ran into Enrique Infante, who still called me faggot. I stopped him one day and asked, "Is that faggot with one G or two?" He didn't like my joke, but I thought it was pretty funny. Sam and Fito thought it was hilarious. I woke up one Saturday morning. A cold front had come in. No snow, but it was really cold. I walked into the kitchen, and Sam and Dad were talking. I poured myself a cup of coffee. Am I interrupting? No, Sam said. Dad and I were talking about the adoption thing. And? Well, Sam said, ever since I brought the subject up, I started calling him Dad, and it felt right. And it kinda was enough. Just to be able to call. She looked at my dad. Just to be free to call you Dad. I don't need the adoption thing. I think I just wanted to know that I belonged. Which is stupid, because I've always belonged. But I still want to change my last name to my mother's. I really liked the smile on my dad's face. Sam, me, Fito. 2 weeks after Mima died, Sam and I walked over to the Circle K. Fito was getting off at 11, and it was a Friday, and we didn't have any plans. We got to the store just as Fito was clocking out. We grabbed some Cokes and some popcorn and headed to Sam's house. We put on an old vinyl album, Dusty Springfield. Sam loved Dusty Springfield. We were hanging out and talking, and Sam kept eyeing Fito's journals. I knew she was going to start digging any minute. So, Fito, how long have you been keeping a journal? How do you know I kept one? All those volumes sitting on that little shelf? She likes to get into everyone's business, I said. She pointed at me. Your business. And then she pointed at Fito. Your business equals my business. And I thought I was bad at math, I said. You are bad at math, Sally. I got the look. Yep, Sam was undeterred. Did it help, Fito, keeping a journal? Yeah. It was almost like having a life. I guess I started when I was in seventh grade. Helped me keep my head on straight. Gave me someone to talk to, even if that someone was just me. You know, I used to go to the library and read. And one day I went to the museum, and I was walking around and shit and looking at the art. And before I left, I went into the museum store, and they had this really cool leather-bound journal with all these blank pages. So, a couple of days later, I walked into that store and bought it. That's how it started. And the books I read made me think of things, and I wrote stuff down. Sam grabbed one of the journals and handed it to him. Read us something. No way. That's private shit. Give me a fucking break, Fito. Fito took the journal away from her. You're not gonna win this one, Fito, I said. Trust me. If not tonight, some other night. She'll hound you and hound you till she wears you down. Sam had her arms crossed. That's how you talk about me behind my back? You happen to be in the room, I said. Sam gently took Fito's journal from him. I'll read something, she said. Fito was quiet. Then he said, Are you always like this? Bossy, you mean? Yep. Some people would call it leadership skills. Fito said, Okay, read something. Go ahead. But if you laugh, I'll fucking kill you. Fair enough, Sam said. She opened the page and started reading. Sometimes I see myself standing on a beach, my bare feet buried in the wet sand. And there's no one on the beach, just me. But I don't feel alone. What I feel is alive, and it seems like the whole world belongs to me. The cool breeze whistles through my hair, and something tells me I have heard that song all my life. I'm watching the waves hit the sand,
the ebb and flow of the waves crashing against the distant cliffs. The ocean is ever moving, and yet there is a stillness that I envy. In the distance, I can see a storm coming in, the dark clouds and the lightning on the horizon moving toward me. I wait, and I wait, and I wait for the storm. And then it comes. And the rains wash away the nightmares and the memories. And I'm not afraid.
Sam put the journal down.
This is awesome, Vito.
Yeah, it is, I said. You can sing and you can write, and you have beautiful thoughts.
Nah, he said. I think I just read The Old Man and the Sea or something. Anyways, bullshit. It's not like I've ever seen the ocean. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Why do you dumb yourself down, Vito? Why do you do that?
Sam was being fierce again.
You're brilliant as hell, I said. You think I'd survive on the streets talking like a fucking book? How long do you think I'd last? I dumb myself down, Sam, to fucking survive. That's how I roll. I carry cigarettes around even though I don't smoke. I hand them out, make friends, and people won't mess with me. I carry change around, and if someone needs some money, I hand them some change. I carry around M&Ms. If I'm sitting around, I pop some. Some guy's always coming up to me and saying, "Got any more of those?" And I give him some. I don't like trouble, and I've learned to get along. And it's not any good to pretend you're smart. Not out there.
And you know, Sam, it's not as if I'm the only one who does that dumbing down shit. What the hell do you think you're doing when you go out with all those guys? Not a damn one of them is your equal. You know that, don't you, Sam?
Yeah, I know that.
Then Vito looked at me.
You do it too. You're better than a fist, Sally. Yeah, you are. You have this letter from your mom, and all of a sudden you can't read.
Yeah, we all dumb ourselves down. I didn't know what to say, and neither did Sam. So we all sat there and listened to Dusty Springfield singing. And then Sam sent me a text.
What if you hadn't gotten the brilliant idea of the running thing?
I thought a moment. Then we wouldn't have found Vito sleeping on a bench.
Sam.
Smiley face.
Me.
And the Vato can sing and he can write.
Sam.
But can he dance? LOL.
You're shitting me. You're texting? What in the hell are you guys texting about?
You, Vito, I said. We're texting about you.
Mom. I thought of Sam. How she'd been so brave and worked through all those stages. The look on her face when she let her mother's ashes blow into the desert. Tough and brave as hell. I thought about what she'd told me and my dad. I just wanted to know that I really belonged, which is stupid, because I've always belonged. I thought about how I'd always hated to be left out. That had come from somewhere inside me. I'd never, ever been left out. For a second, the thought passed through my mind that I should text Sam and tell her I needed her. Tell her to come to my room. So she could be with me. But I knew this moment belonged only to me. To me and my mom. Only to us. I couldn't explain everything to myself. I didn't need to know everything. I'd always thought my hands would be shaking when the day came that I decided to read my mom's letter. But they weren't. Nothing inside me was shaking.
I smoothed out the folds of the letter. My mother had beautiful handwriting. Dear Salvador, writing this letter is one of the hardest things I've ever done. I don't know how much longer I have to live, but I know it won't be long now before I die. It's not easy for me to let go, because dying means I have to let go of you. I'm having a pain-free day today, and my mind is clear. So I'm writing this letter and hope I say all the things I need to say to you. Though I know that's not possible. Vicente has you for the day. He adores you. And you? You sometimes cry when he leaves. You adore him back. I love watching the both of you when you're together. It's been that way with you two since the day you were born. After you were born, I was miserable. I didn't want to have anything to do with you. You see, I suffered from a serious bout of postpartum depression. And it was Vicente who cared for you. He was there 24/7. And he took care of me, too. He took care of both of us. Then I got better. And then for a couple of years, I was the happiest woman in the world. I was working in a law office, and I was making decent money. Vicente had landed a job at the university, and he was becoming a successful artist. He paid for your daycare. Not that you went to daycare every day. On days he didn't teach, Vicente kept you. You had a playpen in his studio. You were such a good baby. Good-natured and happy and affectionate. I was so, so happy. But you have to know what came before to understand why I was so happy in those days before I got sick. I guess I'll start at the beginning. I met Vicente when I was a sophomore at Columbia. I was at a party, and I saw him, and I thought, who is that beautiful man? To say that I wasn't a shy girl is something of an understatement. To be honest, I was more than a little wild. I saw Vicente, and I thought, that man is so going to be mine. I went up to him and said, my name's Alexandra. You can call me Sandy. No one had to tell me I was beautiful. I was born knowing it. I was born parading my beauty around everywhere I went. Not that that's anything to be proud of. There was nothing humble about my beginnings. I came from a family that had wealth and prestige. The word I'd use is entitled. I grew up taking anything I wanted, including boys or men. Life was a party. And there I was in front of Vicente, smiling at him. We wound up talking most of the night. I thought things were going well. I really liked him. He was different from any man I'd ever met. But then he looked at me and said, I have to tell you something. And I said, what? And he said, I'm gay. I think I was really disappointed. And it showed. Sorry, he said, and then he started to walk away. And I thought to myself, so long, buddy. I don't know why, but I went after him. I grabbed his arm and said, well, we can be friends. That was the best decision I ever made. And we did become friends. In fact, Vicente very quickly became the best friend I ever had. The best friend I ever had in this world. I was always getting into trouble. Man trouble, mostly. I'm sorry to have to tell you that I was a lot of drama. I was an incredibly self-destructive young woman. I loved to party, loved to drink, and I loved drugs. Vicente was always pulling me out of messes. I have no idea what I would have done without him. But I was there for him, too. He fell in love with a guy who broke his heart. Vicente doesn't love casually. He's just not built that way. He didn't leave his room for days. I had to drag him down to a restaurant and put some food in him. Then I got him good and drunk and gave him a good talking to. Vicente had a lot to learn about men, and I decided to be his tutor. I knew plenty about men. My life was always something of a train wreck. My parents were wealthy, and they were in love with everything that came along with it. My dad enjoyed buying politicians, and in Chicago there was always a politician more than willing to be bought. My mother raised me to be a certain kind of woman, and I wasn't interested in becoming the kind of woman she wanted me to be. After college, Vicente went on to follow his dream of becoming an artist. I'm not sure I had a dream. Eventually, I got into trouble. I became hooked on alcohol and cocaine. I called Vicente one night. I was living in New York. He came down from Boston where he was living and looked after me. He got me into rehab, and I stayed clean for a few years. But I really didn't have any reason to stay sober. I didn't feel I had any purpose in life. And then I met the man who was to become your father. I fell in love with him, and we were happy for a little while. I moved in with him. One day, we got into an argument. I hadn't been feeling well, and I said something he didn't like. He slapped me with the back of his hand and sent me flying. He looked down at me as I lay on the floor. "Don't ever talk to me like that again." Then he calmly walked out of our apartment. I packed my bags. I didn't know where I was going, but I wasn't broke. I went to a hotel. I felt like crap. I thought I was getting sick, so the next day I made an appointment with my doctor. Then I discovered I was pregnant. You. You were living inside me. And I was so happy. I was so, so happy. It was like my life suddenly had meaning. My life had a purpose. There was a life growing inside me. I don't know why, but I decided to move to El Paso. But I did know why. It was a town Vicente always talked about. He'd get this look on his face and he'd say, "I love that border town." So I moved here. It was far from my family and far from the life I had lived. I was going to start over. I'd lost track of Vicente, but I had his mother's phone number, just in case I ever needed to reach him. That was the first time I spoke to the woman I would come to know as Mima. I told her I was a friend of Vicente's, and that I was trying to reach him. She was so kind when she spoke to me. She gave me his number. I called Vicente and we reconnected. He laughed when I told him I'd moved to El Paso. He said he didn't take me for that kind of girl. About 5 months into my pregnancy, there were complications. And I went to the hospital because I went into labor. You weren't born then, but the doctor said he was afraid I was going to have to stay in bed for most of the time until you were born. I called Vicente. Mima came to take care of me until Vicente managed to get all his stuff together and move. I fell in love with Mima. She took good care of me. When Vicente arrived from Boston, I felt I could breathe again. Vicente didn't want me to name you Salvador. He said it was too big and too heavy a name for a little guy to carry. And besides, he said, you're not Mexican.
I laughed and told him not to be such a snob.
But you were my salvation, Salvador. You were. As I said, the last 2 years of my life have been so beautiful. And all because of you. I'm dying now. And I am so very sad. But I'm happy too. Because you'll have Vicente as a father. I'm sure you love him, and I know he loves you. I don't know how old you are as you read this letter, but I'm sure Vicente gave it to you at just the right time. He was born with beautiful instincts. I think he got those instincts from his mother. I didn't want you to grow up with my family. I didn't want you to grow up with your father's family either. I don't believe they're good people. Not really. They're too in love with money, and too in love with the things money can buy. I just didn't want you to be raised the way I was raised. Your natural father always wanted a son, but in my opinion, he didn't deserve you. Vicente and I are going to the courthouse tomorrow while I can still walk. We're going to get married. And we've already drawn up the papers for him to adopt you. That was the only way I could be certain that Vicente would be allowed to raise you, to be your father. I'm sure you understand what I'm trying to say. I had the power to decide who would raise you. It's strange to talk in the past tense, but by the time you read this, I will have been dead for some time. But, Salvador, I don't have the right to deprive you of the knowledge of who your natural father was. That is not mine to decide. Inside this envelope is another envelope. It has a name. Your father's name. It also has the names of his relatives. It's up to you now to decide if you want to meet him. I know as you read this that you have already turned into a very fine young man. How could you not be? Vicente Silva raised you. I love you more than I can bear. You saved my life. If only for a little while. Not everybody lives a long life, but not everybody gets to give life to a boy as beautiful as you. All my love, Mom. I remembered what Mima told me. Your mother was a beautiful person. I hadn't known so many things, and I'd been so afraid. Maybe I was afraid that she hadn't loved me. Stupid. Here was this letter from a mother who loved me more than she'd loved anything else in the world, and who died too soon. I understood what she'd done for me. I understood that she had fallen in love with Mima because she'd never known a Mima in the world she came from. I understood why she married my dad. To give me a family. A family that knew how to love. I pictured my biological father slapping my mother to the ground. Maybe I had a little bit of him in me. A little bit. But not much. I didn't have to be afraid of becoming like my father. I wasn't that man. And never would be. I think my mom ran away from a selfish and violent man. She saved herself, and saved me, too. I knew myself enough now to know that I'd taken out my fists because of my sense of loyalty to the people I loved. Yeah, I'd struck out at Enrique and other boys, but Dad was right. My anger had come from hurt. I wasn't proud of any of those moments. Hurting other people because you've been hurt? No bueno. Every time I'd pulled out my fists,
I thought I now understood the reflex. Or at least, I was beginning to understand. I couldn't bear to see anyone hurting the people I loved. Because I loved them so much that it hurt me too. And I couldn't stand anyone calling me a white boy because I belonged to a family. And when people called me that, all I heard was that I did not belong to that family. And I did belong to them. And I wasn't going to let anybody tell me otherwise. And one more thing. I didn't want to admit that I had anger living somewhere inside me. But that anger didn't make me a bad boy. All it did was make me human. There was nothing wrong with getting angry. It was what you did with that anger that mattered. All this time, I'd been so scared that I was going to turn out to be like a biological father I'd never met. I'd underestimated myself. In the end, wasn't it up to me to choose? Didn't we all grow up to be the kind of men we wanted to become? I was trying to explain to myself why I was so happy. I hadn't ever felt this happy. I finally understood something about life and its inexplicable logic. I'd wanted to be certain of everything, and life was never going to give me any certitude. I thought of Fito, who always lived in hope when life had offered him no hope. Certitude was a luxury he had never been able to afford. All he'd ever had was a heart incapable of despair. I thought of Mima and Sam's mom, and Fito's mom and my mom. They were dead. They were like the falling yellow leaves of Mima's tree. Life had its seasons, and the season of letting go would always come. But there was something very beautiful in that. In the letting go. Leaves were always graceful as they floated away from the tree. There would always be cancer, and people would always die under its awful and unforgivable weight. There would always be accidents, because people were careless and weren't paying attention when they should have been paying attention. There would always be people who suffered and died from addictions that were powerful and mysterious and uncontrollable. People died every day. And people lived their lives every day. There were always survivors in the aftermath of all that death. I was one of those survivors. And so was Sam, and so was Fito, and so was Dad. I'd watched them in all their beautiful courage. I'd watched them as they struggled through their hurts and their wounds. And there was one thing I could be certain of. I was loved. I pictured Mima pointing at my dad. I knew exactly what she had been trying to tell me. She wanted to be sure that I understood that I had been raised by a kind and tender man. That there was no cruelty in the world that could rob him of his dignity. His heart could not, would not allow it. God, I was happy. I texted Sam. Are you awake? Sam. Just about to fall asleep. Me. WFTD equals nurture. Sam.
What?
Me. As in nature versus nurture? Sam.
You okay, Cray boy?
Me. Go to sleep. I'll tell you in the morning. Sam.
Sweet dreams.
I went outside and sat on the back steps. And all of a sudden, it mattered so much to me where I went to school. I wanted it to be Columbia. That's where my father had met my mother. That's when they'd fallen in love with each other. It wasn't the usual love story, but it was a love story. A love story like mine and Sam's. I held the letter in my hand. Dad said that Mima would always be with us. And my mom, she'd be with me too. That's the way it was when you loved someone. You took them everywhere you went, whether they were alive or not. I read the letter over and over and over. I didn't sleep all night. I wasn't tired. I wasn't tired at all. I was happy sitting there on the steps, my mother's letter in one hand and my essay in the other. I remembered the first day of school as I walked home in the rain, and how I had never felt so alone. The weight of the rain blinding me. I wasn't alone. Mom, Dad, Mima, Sam, Fito, my uncles and aunts, my cousins. No, I wasn't alone. I never had been. I never would be. Alone was not a word that applied to me as I sat there, waiting for the sun to rise. Salvador. I heard my father grinding the coffee beans in the kitchen. I walked inside. He looked up at me.
You're up early.
I wanted to watch the sunrise. Then he studied me.
You look like you've been crying.
I held up the letters. My essay, I said, and Mom's letter.
Oh, he said.
Just then Sam walked in, ready for her morning run. She looked at me, then at Dad. I dangled my letters. Sam's eyes got really big. Are you okay? Yeah, I said. I've never been better. Dad said,
I need a cigarette.
And Sam said, I'm going to text Fito. I'm watching my father sitting on the back steps. He is smoking a cigarette and reading my mom's letter. Sam and Fito are sitting next to him and reading it with him. I am throwing a ball up in the air and catching it in my glove. I am playing catch with myself as they read. They have just finished reading the letter. They are looking at me, Dad and Sam and Fito. I drop the glove and the ball on the ground. I walk toward my father. I take the sealed envelope from him, the one that holds the information about my biological father. I ask him for his cigarette lighter. He hands it to me. I look at Sam and Fito and say, word for the day? Sam understands and says, nurture. I take the unopened envelope. I am watching myself as I take the lighter and place it over the edge of the paper. I am watching the envelope burn. I am watching the ashes floating up to the heavens. I am hearing myself as I tell my father, I know who my father is. I have always known. And now I am laughing, and my dad is laughing, and Fito is smiling that incredible smile of his. We are watching Sam dance around the yard as Maggie follows her and jumps up and barks. Sam is shouting out to me and the morning sky. Your name is Salvador. Your name is Salvador. Your name is Salvador. Epilogue. I got to thinking about the essay I wrote to get into Columbia. I think it might have been different if I'd read my mom's letter first. But it's no use living in regret. My dad told me once, if you make a mistake, don't live in it. He also said that we do things, important things, only when we're ready to do them. I think he's right. But sometimes life forces our hand. Sometimes we have to make decisions whether we're ready to make them or not. I suppose I will have to learn to bend to the inexplicable logic of my life. So this is the letter I sent to Columbia University, which fit none of the guidelines. Dear Admissions Committee, my name is Salvador Silva.
My name represents the story of my life. My name matters more to me than I can ever explain. If things had turned out differently, I would have had a different first name and a different last name. And I would have had a different life. My mother died when I was 3. Her name was Alexandra Johnston. She met the man who was to adopt me, Vicente Silva, while they were undergraduates at this very university. My father came from a poor Mexican-American family, went on to study art at Yale, and has become a rather well-known artist. I think it's important to mention that my father is gay. Not that it matters to me, though it seems to be something that bothers other people. Mostly people who know nothing about the kind of man my father is. I believe that the friendship between my dad and my mother was something incredibly rare. Their love created a family. A real family. When I was 3, my mother died of cancer. And the man I know as my father adopted me. He was my mother's birth coach, and he was in the room when I was born. You could say quite accurately that he was my father from the very beginning. For some reason, my mother decided to name me Salvador. And I'm very happy to have the name she gave me. My last name I got from my father. I grew up feeling and thinking that I was as Mexican as my family. And even though, technically, they're not Mexicans, as they have been in this country for several generations, my uncles and aunts and my grandmother have always thought of themselves as Mexican. That's how I think of myself, too. The most influential person in my life, other than my dad, is my grandmother. I call her Mima. By the time you read this letter, she will probably be dead. She is suffering from the last stages of cancer. It's difficult to put into words what my Mima means to me, so I'm going to end this essay with a memory I have of her. A memory I have carried all my life and will carry until the day I die. I want to be worthy of being called her grandson. If I can live up to that, then I think I just might make a very fine addition to your university. I have a memory that is almost like a dream. The yellow leaves from Mima's mulberry tree are floating down from the sky like giant snowflakes. The November sun is shining, the breeze is cool, and the afternoon shadows are dancing with a life that is far beyond my boyhood understanding. Mima is singing something in Spanish. There are more songs living inside her than there are leaves on her tree. Dad said it was a great letter.
It's really beautiful, son.
Sam said it would get their attention. And she loved my memory of the yellow leaves. She said it was like a poem. I don't really believe it's the kind of letter that's going to get me into Columbia. Would be nice. I know I have the grades to get me into a few of the schools I've applied to. No matter where I go, I'm going to have to take me along for the ride. But the good news is, I'll be taking everyone I love with me, too. Someday I want to go to the beach with Fito and Sam. Sam and I, we can watch Fito walk on the sands of the beach for the first time, and see the expression on his face when he looks out into the horizon where the water meets the sky. Tonight, Dad is taking Sam and Fito out for pizza and a movie. Sam and Fito have been arguing about which movie for the past half hour. And me? I'm going out to dinner with Marcos. It was my idea. He gets to pick the restaurant. And I get to pay. It's time I get to know the man who loves my father. It's time. This is Robbie Damond. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Inexplicable Logic of My Life by Benjamin Alira Sainz. This program was directed by Gabriel DeCure. Executive producer, Kelly Gilday.
Text copyright 2017 by Benjamin Alira Sainz. Production copyright 2017 Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.